So this is the seventh annual festival, is that correct?
Yeah, it is, and I can't believe the 7 years have gone that fast. Over those years, we brought, I think like last count was 25 different bands to Monmouth, so that's exciting stuff.
What's amazing to me is that it's all run by volunteers. How difficult is it to organize an event on this scale when you're doing it with volunteers every year?
Well, I think I'm really lucky because I have the same crew year in and year out. And so we just know what to do. So all you basically have to tell them is when to show up, and everybody knows exactly what needs to be done. And when the actual event happens, I've got some volunteers who are well-versed in what they need to do for loading the bands, setting things up, keeping the musicians fed, and in whatever liquid they happen to be drinking. And it's kind of cool that everybody's got their things, and it's really a pretty well-oiled machine, and they do a lot better job than probably some paid people I could have.
Yeah, and throughout the course of the year, what sort of things do you need to do to have this organized and have it ready to roll?
I mean, the big number one thing, just waiting for the door to close.
Okay.
The big number one thing is finding out what that lineup is going to be. And that's the thing that we start almost immediately. I usually try to get the acts at least penciled in before the end of the year for the next October's Blues Fest. So that's really, and that's mostly my responsibility. I run ideas past the team. We use email to communicate. But it's one of those, you kind of find that magical act or two, and then you sort of can see what pieces will fit in with that. And I take a lot of pride in trying to create a flow of music through the day. But then once you get the band knocked down, then really until early summer, there's not really all that much to do. Then it's sort of like ramping up the sponsorship request machine, which I hate asking for sponsorships, but you got to do it for an event like that. But, I mean, like our volunteer team, we basically have the same bunch of sponsors who love the music as much as we do and step up, and so we can count on their support. So that's absolutely great.
Well, what have you learned from 7 years of doing this? Is there something you did not do the first year that you've learned over time that you need to get done?
There are a million things that we did wrong the first year, and each year we maybe fix one or two of them. I mean, from simple things like how you hang the T-shirts in the lobby to, you know, what's the proper flow for people to get the rib dinners, and do you need waitresses or not to get people drinks, all of that stuff. And you always need to count on at least one major thing going wrong that you cannot anticipate whatsoever, and just hopefully keeping your cool together, and hopefully it won't have a disastrous consequence. I mean, we had Carolina Chocolate Drops were one of our headliners, and they had a huge blowout flat tire on their van that had all their musical equipment in it, you know, on their way here. So they were about 2 hours late. So that was a big thing of, like, you know, keep playing, other people.
Is that what you did? You just had other bands play a little bit longer?
Yeah, yeah. And they actually got a rental van delivered to them and got here as fast as possible and used actually the amps and stuff from the other musicians. You know, we had one of our guitarists, Lurie Bell, while he was playing, his guitar literally fell apart on stage in the middle of a song. A string broke, and then he was able to deal with that, but then, like, the guitar just fell apart, and one of the other musicians from another band ran in with her guitar and gave it to him in the middle of the song while he's singing. And last year, you know, we had one of our main acts go into the hospital, like, that morning into the emergency room and wasn't going to be able to perform, but he had all the musicians who were there to perform for him. So you just kind of take a chill pill and know that there's going to be some rough water, and the fans are really supportive because they know it's an organic thing.
Yeah, any major event, even, you know, a wedding, you know something's going to go wrong on the big day.
Oh, absolutely, and it's kind of handling it with some elegance and a sense of humor, and the whole crew that's there, not only the volunteers but the fans, it's kind of like your family for a day. We get really intimate. I mean, it's, you know, the introductions of the band are very casual. Everybody's really into it. The bands usually sit in the crowd and get to hang out with the people for the day. So everybody's kind of in the same boat together, and it's really supportive atmosphere. So when something goes wrong, you feel like you've got a support system there.
So what's the right way to display a T-shirt?
Well, it was not using black electrical tape to tape it to the wall. It's hanging on a hanger properly. And learned the second year not hanging on a sprinkler system.
I take it there were no problems that day. It's just not something you should do.
That's something you should do, yeah, yeah. And you live and learn.
What about the venue itself? What should people know about that?
The Rivoli Theater is a great old place. It was originally built as a vaudeville theater, kind of a multi-purpose vaudeville, because they also did movies right off the bat. But it's got a big old stage, a really historic and kind of scary green room under the stage. It's got a really nice balcony. It was never one of those, like, really fancy theaters. Like, the Orpheum in Galesburg was built as a fancy theater. This is kind of working class. But it's held up really well. It's got an absolutely great sound system. It's the same computer-matched 60,000-watt sound system they have in the House of Blues up in Chicago. So the sound quality is great. And it's also really, really comfortable. It's set up on multi-tiers. And most people are sitting at comfortable chairs with tables, with tablecloths. And it's a really nice, mellow way to see the show. The thing that, I guess, my hint for the fans who are interested in coming is come and plan to spend the day, because it's amazing how fast the time goes and how comfortable you can be just listening to all this variety of music when all of your other Maslow's hierarchy of needs are met, when you can get your Guinness stout and your rib dinner just brought right to you. It's a pretty awesome experience.
Is there also area for people to stand or dance if they want?
Oh, absolutely. Right down by the stage, we keep a clear area for dancers, and you can kind of tell as the evening goes on, people get a little bit more excited about that. Though the Blues are honestly a little bit of an older crowd, so people appreciate that there's comfortable places to chill out, too. And it's really nice that the Rivoli itself is connected to the Bijou, which is a pub in town. And it also has a full restaurant there, so there's all the, you know, everything you can get at the Bijou Grill you can get. You've got a full bar. Plus, we have, like, a little mini bar actually in the Rivoli with, you know, wait staff there. And our whole thing is just to make it as comfortable as possible and not so you have to miss any music if you're, like, going. Obviously, if you're going to the bathroom, you got to do that. But everything else, can we just make it so you can enjoy the music as long as you want to?
And you'll have someone barbecuing too, correct?
Yeah, Eddie B has been, he's a local fixture here in Monmouth. He's got a giant rib smoker, and he's masterful at the long smoke, and he sets it up in front of the Rivoli at the wee hours of the morning, and stuff's already been smoking all night, and so you kind of come into the event just covered with blues, just the feeling of the blues from that rib smoke. And so he's serving rib dinners, and the atmosphere is great. It's casual. It's in no way, shape, or form pretentious at all. It's just come have a great day of fun listening to America's really aboriginal type of music.
How are ticket sales this year?
I always get scared when I get asked that, because you never know until the day happens, because there's so many venues that are selling them. But the one instance I have this year is that I just had someone call me this afternoon wanting an additional 20 tickets, and I don't have 20 printed tickets left. So I've never had that problem before. So I hope that bodes well. I'm going to have to, like, Xerox some tickets and sign them or something like that to come up with it, because I can't print them fast enough. But that's a good problem, and it makes me guardedly optimistic. And for me, with the ticket sales, it's not so much about the money from the ticket sales. It's more about getting the right level of crowd to feed the energy of the musicians, you know, because you, more than anything, you want them to have that experience of giving to people who are kind of giving back, you know, that kind of give and take. And that's what scares me the most. And we haven't been let down yet, but I'm always terrified until the music starts.
And I'm guessing you want to also know that people are interested in this. I mean, if you get 50 people that show up, maybe it's time to not do it anymore.
Absolutely. And we did do, under the Monmouth Blues banner, we did a couple solo act blues shows at different times during the year, and we had one of those horrible things where it was absolutely a great concert, but 23 people came. And, I mean, it's kind of a dagger in the heart for not only the musicians, but the one who's paying for it. And we decided not to do those single acts because it was a little too risky. But the festival has been growing every year, and I'm just hoping that it's a trend that we'll continue to follow.
Who's headlining this year?
What's kind of cool this year is we really have three headliners. We've got two local bands, Charlie Hayes and Joel Filming, always open up every blues festival. Between the two of them, they've got 75 years of experience, and they're kind of the local favorites. Glenn Brooks, who is a Monmouth resident but has spent many years working for the city of Pasadena, has recently come back since he's retired and has traveled the world playing jazz and blues. And he's put together a blues band just for this event with Joe Metzke, who's a guitar player out of St. Louis, who's absolutely amazing. Those are our two regional guys. And usually we have maybe three or four regional guys, but this year we have three headliners. And the first is Alvin Youngblood Hart. He's a Grammy winner. He's probably the preeminent super old school blues player right now. Solo, he plays on a parlor size acoustic guitar, resonator, and banjo. He was featured in one of the Martin Scorsese blues documentaries, and he was also the musical director of the Samuel L. Jackson movie Black Snake Moan. So he's got some chops, and I've been trying to get him for years, and just the cards aligned. Next, we've got something a little bit different. The Nikki Hill Band, she's out of Austin, Texas, and she's kind of like a 60s throwback chanteuse with the turban and the leopard-type pants and has a power trio behind it. It's kind of like roots rock and blues kind of blended together, but really cool, high energy, you know, a little bit of a Eartha Kitt meets Etta James kind of stuff. It's like, you got to love that. And the last act, which is really not so much the headliner in terms of fame, but I'm trying to amp the energy up, is the Cassie Taylor Band, and I'm really excited about that. She's only 27, but she's been playing blues for 20 years. Her dad is Otis Taylor, one of the great old men of the blues, and she's been his lead bass player for at least a decade. And she's got this band together, and she's doing her own songwriting, and it's really amazing. It's a real fresh face of the blues, having this 27-year-old artist who grew up old school in that family, but has taken it in a different direction. And I'm just thrilled to death. And anyone who kind of knows the blues, they look at the poster and they're like, oh, this is going to be good.
What sort of direction is Cassie taking the music?
It's not so much in the like Chicago blues into rock, or there's some, you know, some blues musicians are kind of going into funk. It's almost more like singer-songwriter, but with a really deep 12-bar backbeat and just a really kind of thumping modern bass. But she does things like, on her live concerts, she'll play a Nine Inch Nails song and then transition it into Muddy Waters in the same song. And it's like, that kind of stuff is really cool, where you're blending really, and they both have that driving beat that, you know, and it's you know, the blues, especially when electrified, is very sexy music, and, you know, Nine Inch Nails is the same kind of way. And I think she's kind of tapping into that, finding those connections that aren't necessarily so obvious.
What else should people know about the festival?
When you come, plan to spend the entire day. It's going to be absolutely wonderful. Another cool thing that's going on this year is Tri-States Radio is doing one of their shows, a folk duo called the Honey Dewdrops, the same night at the Buchanan Center, which is just about a block down. And we're doing a really cool cross-promotion, because with the Blues Fest, you can come in and out all day. You get a wristband. So if you've got a Blues Fest ticket for $5, you can go over and see the Honey Dewdrops. If you've got a Honey Dewdrops ticket for $5, you can come over and see the Blues Fest. So we've got this great energy within two blocks of six different musical acts and unknown quantities of slabs of ribs. Who knows how many kegs of Guinness. And to me, that's a recipe for a great day, and it makes you like pretty darn happy to be living in a town like Monmouth.
All right, thanks a lot.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for talking.